Hello, everyone. Today's talk is on the Sambodhi Sutta. The Sambodhi Sutta is also called the Wings to Self-Awakening, and in this sutta, the Buddha describes the importance of having admirable friends. Another way of saying that is associating with people, especially as far as our Dhamma practice is concerned, that are well-focused on the Dhamma. I think I just said the word Dharma, and I try to keep that clear when I'm saying Dhamma. I mean the Buddha's teachings, and Dharma meaning what has developed since the Buddha's passing, the later developed schools. Associations is another word for attachment or clinging. And what we cling to, what we associate with, including other people, especially ideologically, meaning as far as our Dhamma practice, what we associate with, who we associate with, to a large extent will determine what our experience in life is. And the second noble truth, the Buddha describes the arising of dukkha, originating in what we're craving for, and once whatever that whatever we're craving for is achieved, or that we now become attached to it, we cling to it. And this can certainly be through our associations, especially my dog has me a little bit distracted today. Well-intentioned people looking for developing understanding, looking for, another way of saying it, just a better way of living in the world, and becoming enamored with the whole idea of our association. And then if those associations aren't well focused on the Dhamma, the fact that we are now attached to them, clinging to them, whether as individuals or as a group, that can direct our practice in ways that are not very skillful. And so this was a common problem even during the Buddha's day, and he addressed it. And let me read from the sutta and some of my commentary. The Buddha was at Anathapindika's monastery at Jeta's Grove. He asked those gathered, "Friends, if those of other sects would ask you, what are the prerequisites for developing the wings of self-awakening, how would you respond?" And even that one line is very important. The Buddha refers to the whole process of awakening as self-awakening. He described himself and others that followed his path and developed awakening as rightly self-awakened ones. The reason why that's so important is it points directly to the Eightfold Path as an individual path to be developed. And it's not something that, awakening is not something that can be bestowed on us. It's not something that we gain through performing certain rituals. It's not by blind faith. It's not by empowerments. It's not by gaining merit by simply doing engaging in ethical behavior. It is by directly engaging with the Eightfold Path that we become rightly self-awakened. The monks and nuns asked the Buddha to tell them his response so that, in quotes, they would remember it clearly. "Listen closely then. The prerequisites for developing the wings to self-awakening are here for you," meaning that they're available to everyone through the Dhamma. There's nothing hidden. The Buddha continually reasserted that he doesn't hold anything back. He doesn't teach anything hidden. It's all right there and available to us. The first thing is having admirable friends and companions. And again, what he means is people that are well focused on the Dhamma. And this doesn't mean that we shouldn't associate with people that aren't engaged in a true Dhamma practice. It's simply what he's referring to is our associations within a Dhamma practice. In that, as far as our Dhamma practice is concerned, our Sangha should be well focused on the Dhamma. If we're looking at a continual meeting with groups of people as a so-called spiritual practice, if we're seeing that as our Dhamma practice, and we hope to truly develop the Dhamma, that needs to be a well focused meeting. It needs to be a well focused Dhamma. And again, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't go to yoga class or different types of maybe mindfulness classes, or perhaps even listen to later developed teachers that have their own views of what Buddhist practice is. But at least to be very, very clear that what we're associating with is not something that the Buddha taught. And the reason why that's important is that the only way to overcome wrong views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths is to be very clear and well focused on what our Dhamma practice is. And that's what the Buddha is speaking to here. The Buddha continues, remaining virtuous and restrained and understanding the danger of even the slightest faults. And that's something, that last line, even the slightest fault, sometimes the Buddha would call that even the slightest danger, is something else that he emphasizes over and over again. It doesn't mean that we should be hypervigilant to the point that we're creating more stress in our lives, but we should recognize that taking liberties with the Dhamma in any way as a way of excusing hurtful or wrong behavior rooted in ignorance, in other words, making it okay, is not recognizing the danger in even the slightest fault. And that does not mean that we should beat ourselves up for when we stray from the path, but we also should be very careful that we're not making excuses for straying from the path. And that's something that is very, very common today. Those that come to my classes and listen to my talks know that I say over and over again to be very, very gentle with yourself. Don't judge yourself harshly. Don't judge the Dhamma harshly. But we also must recognize when we're straying from the path. And that is why it's so important to develop the refined mindfulness that comes from the entire Eightfold Path. The Buddha continues, hearing easily sober talk and talk conducive to gaining understanding. Referring to sober talk here doesn't necessarily mean to listen to people that are sober, although there's unfortunately too many stories of teachers who became famous for giving talks while they're drunk or high, or even their behavior that resulted from that. And that's just hurtful. That's just outrageous. But it also, sober talk also means talk that's not intoxicated with self-referential views. Hearing talks on modesty, contentment, the value of seclusion and quiet, non-entanglement, persistence, virtue, concentration, discernment, and the knowledge of true vision and release from craving and clinging. Those are the things that we should be listening to as Dhamma practice, not conceptual applications in any way, not mystical talks, not talks of attainment of future more advantageous rebirths, or even gaining merit from gods and devas. That's the Buddha saying that all of that is intoxicated talk. The Buddha continues, remaining persistent for abandoning unskillful mental qualities and for developing skillful mental qualities, resolute in right effort. And that's the Buddha's description of right effort, to put our efforts in that direction and to use that intention to continue a well-focused Dhamma practice. Furthermore, for one developing the wings to self-awakening, they would maintain discernment and understanding of impermanence and the cessation of stress. That directly relates to developing the Eightfold Path. But also to be mindful of impermanence. It's so important to recognize that whatever we're engaged with, whatever is occurring in our lives, certainly whatever might be creating a disturbance in our minds, and that doesn't necessarily mean a painful disturbance. It could be a pleasurable disturbance, an excitement, an intoxication with what's occurring. To recognize that all of these experiences and all these things that we're attaching ourselves to and creating a self-identity over is all impermanent. To use the Buddha's words, it's like foam on the water. There's nothing there. And if we can remain mindful of that, we'll cease attaching ourselves to impermanent objects, events, views, and ideas that only continue ignorance of Four Noble Truths and only continue suffering. The Buddha continues, when one has admirable friends and companions, it is expected that they will be virtuous and restrained, again, using that phrase, seeing the danger in even the slightest faults. Our friends and our associates within Dhamma practice should be part of that framework. We should be developing a sangha that encourages developing the Eightfold Path, not something that may be an ongoing distraction, meaning getting into other practices and ideas that have nothing to do with what the Buddha taught. The Buddha continues, when one has admirable friends and companions, it is expected that they will hear sober talk and talks conducive to gaining understanding. They will hear talks on modesty, contentment, the value of seclusion and quiet, non-entanglement, persistence, virtue, concentration, discernment, and the knowledge of true vision and release from craving and clinging. The last, that mention of concentration is so important. The sole reason why the Buddha taught meditation is to deepen concentration. And there's many, many practices today that are so-called, or called mindfulness practices, that separate from the Dhamma, they're somewhat wholesome and possibly helpful, but when they're seen as part of Dhamma practice, they're simply a distraction. We get into mindfulness practices and consider them meditation, but they're really more contemplative practices or ways of increasing mindfulness, but not necessarily mindfulness of, excuse me, of the Eightfold Path. And those may or may not be helpful. That's up to each individual to decide. But again, the purpose of the Eightfold Path is to provide a framework for our Dhamma practice. The Buddha continues, when one has admirable friends and companions, it is expected that they will maintain discernment and understanding of impermanence and the cessation of stress. And that points directly to a sangha that is well focused on the Eightfold, on the Four Noble Truths, which develops an understanding of the three marks of existence, impermanence, the not self characteristic, and resulting dukkha. Once these qualities are developed, there are four more to develop: contemplation of what is unattractive so as to abandon craving. In other words, we have to have a framework to recognize what is unattractive so that we let go of it. And what is unattractive is anything that is impermanent that we're attaching ourselves to, creating a desire about or aversion towards, and then creating an identity. Those are all things that are unattractive because they lead to further confusion, delusion, and suffering. It's not necessarily that on their surface they're unattractive, such as a moldy sandwich. It's anything that will continue ignorance. We should be seen as unattractive. We do not want to be attracted towards it. This is where discernment comes from. Or I should say, that's the purpose of discernment, not where it comes from. Goodwill should be developed so as to abandon ill will. It's a simple and direct teaching, but so many of us, and it's certainly so prevalent in the world today, is we excuse our ill will towards others for some ideological moralistic view, rather than recognizing that our ill will for any reason, no matter what ideology we're using to justify our ill will, is hurtful towards ourselves and is hurtful towards others. Mindfulness of the breath in the body should be developed so as to develop non-distraction. This relates directly to the four foundations of mindfulness. I'm giving a series of talks right now that are being posted on the website under the four foundations of mindfulness. And the Buddha taught the four foundations of mindfulness primarily for deepening concentration, meaning that it's used in meditation. And the first foundation of mindfulness is to be mindful of the breath and the body. And then in the Satipatthana Sutta, where he teaches the four foundations of mindfulness, after he teaches the importance of using meditation to deepen concentration, being mindful of the four foundations of mindfulness, then it is taken outside of meditation and applied in very specific ways, not in very general ways. In other words, not to be mindful of eating a grape or washing the dishes or anything, extremely slow walking. All those can be wholesome. But the Buddha taught mindfulness in very, very specific ways, in the four foundations of mindfulness, to be used in meditation, and then to be applied to being mindful of the five hindrances, the five clinging aggregates, the seven qualities of an awakened mind, and finally to the Four Noble Truths, to be mindful of these subjects. Let me read that again just to put this back into context. Mindfulness of the breath in the body should be developed so as to develop non-distraction. Develop non-distraction. That's the purpose of being mindful of breath in the body. They should develop understanding of impermanence so as to root out conceit and further eye-making. Once we recognize that these things, these identities that we're creating through clinging to objects, events, and views and ideas are all impermanent, Once we can truly understand that, we'll cease the I-making. Why continue the effort of creating identities that are impermanent? They're like foam on the ocean. Let go of them. For when one understands impermanence, clinging to anatta, to not-self, is abandoned. Understanding not-self uproots conceit. Unbinding arises in this moment. This is the key to there's more to that. It's about halfway through this sutta. There's more on the website. The whole point of the Buddha's teaching is to recognize anatta. The Buddha uses that term not to say there's no such thing as a self, one of the most misunderstood and contradictory teachings of later developed Buddhism. The Buddha used the term anatta to point out that the views that we use to create what is seen as a permanent and substantial self are wrong views. They're views that are rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, and simply to let go of the views. It's the views that are creating all the confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing disappointing and unsatisfactory experiences in life. Let go of the views. The first factor of the Eightfold Path is right view. That implies that there's such a thing as wrong views. And that's one of the things that nobody wants to accept initially, is that we are rooted in wrong views of ourselves in relation to the world. It's one of the primary reasons why all of the contradictory teachings of the Buddhist teachings have arisen over the years. In very subtle and some not so subtle ways, these later developed teachings continue to create a self in other realms that are acceptable to an ignorant mind, a mind that is ignorant before noble truth. And that directly relates to having admirable friends and having admirable and wise associations. So that's the end of today's talk, today's podcast. I will return next Wednesday with another one. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you have any questions, please send me an email from the website, from CourseMemberMeditation.com. Thank you. Peace.
Thank you for listening. Please visit CourseMemberMeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at CourseMemberMeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through CourseMemberMeditation.com. Peace.